Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, people in the blindness community have been talking about the possibility of having an affordable, page-size, graphical, tactile display for a long time now. Well, in this show, we'll learn that it might become a reality soon.
We'll speak with Venkatesh Chari, President and CTO at Orbit Research, and Ken Perry, Project Manager at the American Printing House, about their revolutionary page-size display and how it can be used. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Ken and Venkatesh.
If you want a tip for the week, it's get a job like I have so you can play with everything early.
We're retired research scientists, and we actually each spent a year or two on assignment to a product development team, and we know just how hard the work is and how intense, but boy, it sure is fun getting your hands on some of the novel technology, especially before it's introduced to the public and being able to have an impact on how it turns out.
Absolutely, and as you said, you know, it is a lot of very hard work, but it is just so much fun to work on these products and to solve technical challenges and non-technical challenges as well. And then, you know, for us as a company and for me as an individual, I think, you know, one of our greatest rewards is to see the impact it has on the users. And, you know, that in itself is a tremendous, tremendous reward for us.
And if you can enjoy your job, that's a great thing. I've often told people that I'd play lots of mathematical games and puzzles when I was a kid, and then someone paid me to do it for work later on in life.
And if somebody ever tries to tell you that you can't have a technical career or any other kind of career just because you can't see, well, that's just plain not true. And we've done lots of shows where we've spoken with blind engineers and scientists, including one of the people on today's episode.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. Let's start by meeting Venkatesh and Ken and learning about Orbit Research.
My name's Ken Perry. I'm a project leader with American Printing House. I've been working on the graffiti now since a very long time ago. So I'm kind of the interface between the American Printing House and Orbit Research.
My name is Venkatesh Chari, and I'm president and CTO at Orbit Research. Among other things, I interface with Ken on the graffiti and other projects.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Does either of you?
Yes, I'm 100% blind. I've been blind since 1991. I lost my sight in the military. And since then, I've been doing everything from getting my bachelor's in computer science to getting jobs in the accessibility field. And now I'm here at the American Printing House.
And Venkatesh?
I'm sighted.
So how did you get into working in adaptive technology for the visually impaired?
So my background is in speech technology, speech recognition, and my first job out of graduate school was with a company that developed products for the blind. And I was very interested in the kind of opportunities and challenges it offered me, primarily on the technical side. And, you know, one thing led to the other, and I have pretty much spent my entire career now developing these products.
Well, on behalf of our listeners, thank you.
You're very welcome.
So today we wanted to primarily talk about the graffiti graphics display, but I thought that first maybe, Venkatesh, you could tell us a little bit about Orbit Research.
Sure. We were founded with the mission to use mainstream technologies in both development as well as manufacturing to create breakthrough products that would bring affordability and high performance to daily use products for this market. So we started with a talking scientific calculator, and we developed a relationship, a partnership with Texas Instruments to create a speech-adapted version of the TI-34 scientific calculator. And then since then, we have developed a series of scientific calculators. And about 4 years ago, we teamed up with APH to develop a talking version of the TI-84 graphing calculator. It behaves exactly like a regular TI-84 that's used in all high schools today. And yet it provides a audio and speech representation for all of the functionality.
We actually did an entire episode about the TI-84 in episode number 1334, and we spoke with Sina Baram, who I understand was working with you on that project.
That is absolutely correct. Sina was a huge help and contributor to the efforts in making it really user-friendly and effective, especially on aspects related to sonification of graphs.
What other products come from Orbit Research?
So in addition to the line of calculator products, which today include a new generation scientific four-line calculator that we launched in 2014, we also have some currency reading products. The first one that we developed was the iBill, which is a money identifier. And this product is now being distributed by the U.S. Department of Treasury to any eligible resident of the United States. In addition, we also have developed and provided to the Bank of Canada a version of the iBill for Canadian currency. Other than that, we have been working for the last several years on tactile technologies. One is the graffiti product that we're going to talk about later today, and the other is the Orbit Reader 20, which is a 20-cell refreshable braille display,
which we talked about with Ken in episode 1649 a couple of months ago. And coincidentally, in episode 1644, we spoke with the director of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing about what the United States government is doing in terms of making it easier for the visually impaired to identify currency. And they talked about the iBill that Orbit Research created.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is the graffiti refreshable tactile graphics display.
Today, we want to talk primarily about the graffiti refreshable graphics display, which sounds like a great innovation and can be a great tool. Can you give us an overview of what this product is about?
Sure. It is essentially a tactile graphic display, and what it is an array of moving pins, and the pins can acquire different heights, which enables the display to show topographical maps and other graphical elements such as shades of gray or color represented as varying heights of pins, which can be easily sensed by a user's fingers. The array is also touch sensitive, so a user can draw with one's finger on the panel, and the pins where you touch will rise or go down depending on which mode you are in. So you can draw and erase, and you can draw with different heights, with different height settings. And this also allows novel uses, such as pushing or nudging an object on the display to physically move it. So if you had a circle or a ball, you could potentially push it in one direction and it would move on the display.
What types of things can be displayed on graffiti?
The graphic part of it allows visualization in tactile form of any form of graphical information, such as charts, drawings, flowcharts, floor plans, images, and photographs. And the source of these pictures can be essentially any device. It can be a computer. It can be a mobile device. It can be images stored on an SD card. And it can also be an HDMI input. So any device that can output HDMI can connect to the graffiti unit and display whatever is on its screen. In addition to the HDMI port, the unit will connect over USB and Bluetooth interfaces to pretty much any computing device that supports these.
How big is this display, both in terms of physical dimensions and number of pins?
Physically, it is a little bit larger than a letter size sheet of paper. The array size is 60 pins by 40 pins.
So each pin is larger than and spaced further from its neighbors than in a typical Braille cell.
That is correct. It is slightly wider in pitch.
But still, the total number of pins is the equivalent of hundreds of Braille cells.
Correct.
Using traditional technology, that would be extraordinarily expensive to produce. You obviously have some other technology so that people can afford this thing.
That is correct. So the total number of pins on this array in the first model that we are going to introduce is 2,400 pins. In comparison, a 20-cell Braille display has 160 pins. So it's a considerably larger number of pins. And though the pitch and resolution is not as dense as a Braille display, the unit has the ability to allow zoom and pan functions. So one can zoom into a picture and see more detail and pan across it to cover other sections of the picture.
People have been talking about large tactile displays for a long time now, and it's been very cost prohibitive with the number of pins that you needed, number of drivers, etc. I was wondering if there was some breakthrough technology that enabled this to be done at this time.
That is a good question. Yes, it has been prohibitively expensive to achieve a large number of pins. We have developed a unique technology that we have patented. We call this the tactuator technology, and it is very different from what has been traditionally used, and it is a lot more cost-effective and allows us to offer features that are fairly unique, such as the multi-level height control for each pin.
That's very special. That's very different than other displays.
Also, it allows for random access to the pins, which means somebody as crazy as me could write a simple finger pong game. Because since I can actually access the pins individually instead of having to do them row by row or something, it gives us the ability to do some really interesting things.
So you're saying that when you refresh the display, you don't necessarily need to refresh the entire thing in a raster pattern like a television does. You can refresh an individual pin.
Correct.
Oh, so that makes the responsiveness much quicker because you're not trying to activate 2,400 pins at once. You can just do a few that are of interest.
Yeah. I mean, I sit here with the TI-84 connected to it, and if I graph something, as soon as the TI-84 sends the graph, it's done very quickly, and I can view the graph by hand. And right now, the current prototype is only 30 by 20 pins, and so the graph is kind of smushed a bit, because we have technology that we use to condense the graph. But if we enlarge it on that 30 by 20, I can actually even see the letters as you would see them. So if I did like 5 times 5, you can actually read the numbers 5x5. And if I scroll over, you can actually see the answer 25 on the screen. So, and on the graph, you can enlarge it and see one coordinate at a time, you know, one the plus minus coordinate or the minus minus coordinate of a Cartesian graph kind of thing. So I can't wait to get the 60 by 40, which is coming very shortly to us. But right now I'm dealing with 30 by 20, and it's amazingly useful.
The ability to zoom in then can be quite a good feature for looking at some of these things like graphs and pictorials.
Well, Yeah, let me give you another example. So I know the other example I have is we had done the podcast on electronics with Josh Mealy, and I use this device to – well, I print out a schematic on an embosser, and I can see the overall layout of the schematic. But on this device, I can send that same image to the device, and while it's kind of condensed, when I expand it, I can actually view the individual pieces like a transistor and what they look like in the schematic, and I can walk the line by moving left and right and actually see the schematic, which has been really helpful for some of the projects that I've been doing.
Oh, I bet you that could be really helpful, because one of the things you and Josh talked about when we talked about the Arduino project and doing electronics being blind is that sometimes there were circuit diagrams, and although there were lots of directions written up in text, the circuit diagrams were very difficult to interact with. So this makes it possible.
Correct.
So you found lots of uses for this device already, even in its prototype stage. It sounds like it should be quite useful for scientists, engineers, and people who need to look at graphical representations of any number of things, as well as students. What else can you tell us about the technology?
So the technology is very power efficient, and once the pins have been set in a position, you know, either up or down or in one of the intermediate positions, they don't consume any power, and the display can stay in that state indefinitely.
Are you able to run this device under battery power then because it's so energy efficient, or does it need to stay plugged in?
No, absolutely not. It will run either on battery, or if it's plugged in, it'll charge the batteries. But it is designed to be fully portable and, you know, work standalone. It is very power efficient. It only consumes power when pins are moving. And also depends a little bit on what you're doing. If you're connected over Bluetooth, you know, obviously that consumes a little bit of power, but that's fairly small.
So that makes it portable as well. So, for example, when Ken's working on his circuits, he can take the display with him and use it wherever he wants without worrying about tripping on a power cord.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering, you talked about displaying graphs and pictorials that, you know, they might come from a computer or some other source. I was wondering if there's any kind of special software that is needed on the host device, or is this as simple as plugging it into your computer and being able to scroll around the screen sort of like you would with a screen magnifier or a screen reader?
Right. So if it's connected over HDMI, that's precisely what you could do. You can scroll around the entire screen. Obviously, you know, if your screen is very high resolution, you can see a zoomed out view of that and then can zoom into portions that you want to magnify or look at more closely.
And you also talked about having a mode whereby you can feel what is on the display, but you could also use it as a device whereby you could touch something and have the device take an action. Are those two separate modes? You wouldn't want to interfere with the picture that you're trying to look at, for example.
That is correct. So these are more advanced modes that, you know, we can develop to essentially interact in whatever ways make sense. So we need to think of practical applications where these would be useful. One application that Ken and I have talked about a lot is developing games, and Ken is very keen on doing that. And instead of having a separate controller or using control through keys, you could have the objects on the screen, whether it be balls or paddles, react to touch. So you could push a paddle to the left or right or up or down, or push a ball, and the object would react to that because the unit takes touch input and then can, under control of the software application, move the object or the displayed graphic around.
So it sounds like the architecture that you've initially designed is very flexible and expandable into other applications in the future as time permits.
Yeah, I want to throw in, this is one place where the partnership between APH and Orbid comes in handy, because what we're doing right now and is sending out these prototypes to expert reviewers. And at this very early stage, when things can still be majorly changed, we're asking them how best to use these tools that we already have. For instance, you know, when I was at home last weekend, I was trying to draw where I wanted to put some counters in the house so that my wife could understand what I was seeing. And the interesting thing is she's sighted, but I can actually draw this on the display and she can see it because, you know, it really does show a graphic representation. If you can imagine those toys you buy at the store where you can push your face or your hand into it and it actually makes the form of your hand, you know, if I draw it, she can see what I've drawn, and that's a quick, instant reaction to something I've drawn. So it's a really nice tool. But with the experts, what we want to do is get their input on, you know, school, on jobs, on business, on and what they think this technology should and can do so that we can make it work better for them when it finally does come out.
Are there any hooks in the graffiti so that you or third parties could add capabilities in the future?
There is a open API so that anybody, for instance, let's say if NVDA wanted to try to make, I realize this is not a Braille device because of this, you know, the size of the separation of pins, but we do show Braille on this device for messages. It's what I call big Braille. And so, like, if you have an error message, it'll show up on the device as big Braille. What I think would be fun is if maybe somebody at NVDA would make a driver for this, because you could make this into a big Braille as 6 lines × 20 cell device.
You talked about the prototype that you have that's kind of small now, and you're showing this device at CSUN and are working on a full-page device. When will this device become available to the general public? Do you have an idea about that?
The current plan is to have a product be available at the end of 2017.
Like you said, the plan is, you know, the end of this year. But one thing people have to understand, and again, this is the great part about what we're doing, having these prototypes, is it could come to pass that one of our experts or our user groups, because we're going to have about, you know, 40 prototypes that we're going to pass between schools and students, and it could come that maybe 5 of them say, you know, this would work so much better if X happened. And if X happened, but that could move us 3 months beyond, because we really want to put this out so that it's the best graphical tool response. And if that means we have to wait 3 more months, then that's what's going to happen. So it's hard to give you an exact date. I think it's good to say, you know, we are shooting for the end of the year, but depending on feedback from users and issues that we may encounter, that could, you know, slide a few months.
I don't think there's a manufacturer on the planet that hasn't had to make the same trade-off between including features and when to launch the product.
Correct.
So at CSUN, are you guys going to be in the exhibitors hall showing these devices, or are you giving a presentation, or both?
Both. We're going to have a device at the table, I would say 90% of the time. If it's not at the table, it'll be at our sessions. We have a session on the graffiti, and we have a session on the Orbit Reader 20. Venkatesh, I, and Jeanette Wicker will be doing those sessions. Jeanette Wicker is my co-project leader on the Orbit Reader 20 and on the graffiti. So she's the other half of me here at the American Printing House.
So if you're lucky enough to be at CSUN, head on over to the Orbit Research and APH booth and take a look at this device. Now for this week's final item, how you can learn more about the graffiti refreshable tactile graphics display and about both Orbit Research and the American Printing House.
So if people would like to find out more about the graffiti device and Orbit Research in general, where would you send them?
We would send them to our website, which is www.orbitresearch.com. And they can find all our products, including the graffiti, right on our homepage.
And can you spell graffiti for our listeners?
Sure. It's G-R-A-P-H-I-T-I.
Which is a very clever name because it indicates that it's used for graphics, but it kind of sounds like the stuff kids spray paint in the subway.
it does sound like the things kids spray paint, because when you're drawing, depending on how much pressure you put on the device, actually it looks like a spray paint art when you do it. Now, you can get down to where you move one pen at a time, but the point is I can do really cool little drawings that have, you know, kind of larger pens, or, you know, when you're using a paint program as a sighted person, you could pick a small pen or a large pen. Well, if I draw with my thumb, I actually get a three swath of pens coming up, which gives you that spray painty look. So it's kind of cool.
That has to be fun.
Cool. Do you have a social media presence?
We do. We have a Facebook page, and we are also active on Twitter.
And do you know offhand what your handles are?
On Twitter is Orbit Research 1. On Facebook is Orbit Research.
So are there other ways that people can contact either of you or Orbit Research to ask more questions, or perhaps an email or a phone number would be useful?
Sure. They can contact us via email at info@orbitresearch.com. That's orbitresearch.com.
On the website, that email address is listed as information@orbitresearch.com. You might want to try both.
And our phone number is 888-606-7248.
Great. And Ken, can you give similar contact information for APH? So the website, the email, phone number?
So my email is kperry@aph.org. That's kperry@aph.org. And my Twitter handle is @PlugPerry. Those are the, you know, easy ways to get a hold of me. And our website at the American Printing House is also a good place to check for our technology. And our technology page is tech.aph.org. And that should list everything we have out now. As for graffiti, we don't currently have a page up yet. We're working on starting the documentation and things out. And as soon as that comes out, that'll be listed on that tech.aph.org page. There is a, I guess you could call it a landing page, and that's at www.aph.org/graffiti. That has kind of a basic brochure about what we're doing, and it has a picture of the smaller Proto 2 with 30 by 20. Soon we'll be replacing that with a newer style prototype that people can see what the full size will look sort of like.
And that was certainly a lot of information, but if you're looking for any of that contact information or resources we listed, just go to our show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and you'll find it all there.
That's it for show number 1710. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about teaching blind children. Carol Puchalski has worked for over 30 years as a developmental psychology consultant at the Anchor School for Blind Children in Colorado. And she recently returned from a trip to Uganda, where she has been volunteering to assist a school for the blind there. We'll speak with her about her experiences helping blind children, both in the U.S. and in Uganda. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.